Welcome to a special episode of the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me as always, a case could be made for either one of us being either Rust or Marty here, so let's skip the usual compare and contrast and go right to saying hi to my co-host, Dan. How you doing, Dan?
I'm Rust. I'm doing well.
You know, I don't mind. If you're Rust.
I'm skinny, goofy looking, and like, you know, I'm in like unhealthily skinny looking in the face, so I just feel I'm Rust.
And when you do say shit, it's kind of weird. No.
Yeah. I definitely have the potential for weirdness at any moment. And actually, and I do talk like that sometimes, but usually it's more of just like complaining that like, you know, like, hey, like, you know, teenager that I work with, I just want you to realize that, like, you may find, like, you know, this classmate attractive, but that's just because, like, 50 years ago, somebody was trying to, like, sell, like, shirts or something, and then, like, we've all became brainwashed down the line, and, like, nobody understands anything. That's more the kind of crap that I say. Not quite as existential, just more, like, raging against capitalism.
So, because you're talking to someone who's pretty much a teenager, is that why you keep peppering it with the word like every time? No, I'm just kidding.
It's just viral.
Well, for the folks out there who are actually listening, we were already planning to get together at least once or twice this week. First of all, obviously to discuss Legion, and also the long-delayed DC Comic TV show Extravaganza with our little STVD All-Star Squad, who have been on the bench for 2018, pretty much.
We threw them all in the Speed Force.
Yeah, pretty much. And not to mention, we've still been dragging our feet just a little bit on our follow-up podcast, both Travelers and The Crown. But tonight, as a special surprise for our listeners, and one in particular, we are throwing, I would say, probably our most unexpected or craziest curveball since our beloved What If We Had a Podcast and Covered the Original Better Call Saul episode of Breaking Bad back when it aired in 2009. So hopefully this will be in that. This might not be quite as much fun, maybe, but I think it'll still be in that same kind of ranking.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, listeners to the podcast, as well as, like, you know, several of which are friends, you know, realize that, you know, we're both kind of a pain in the ass sometimes, and we like to be, you know, know-it-all pricks whenever we can, because, I mean, we do know some stuff, and we like to lord it over, so, yeah. I mean, we have decades of haranguing people into watching TV shows, mocking the likenesses of other things that other people like and stuff, so, but you know, we can be difficult, but I decided for once we could do something nice. One of our listeners, Jana, I guess I can't really say it in any glowingly awesome terms, but she lost her husband, unfortunately, so it's just not, like, you know, not a cool thing, but we figured that, you know, since we've been pretty much made hay mocking a show that she's had nothing but good to say about, at least the first season of it, True Detective, I'm just like, I think, you know, we can go back and revisit it and try to not be our usual snarky assholes. Which in itself should be interesting to listen to because, you know, it's Scott and Dan, so.
Yeah.
Here we are.
It's kind of like looking at it with, I guess since we've seen it already, we're not looking at it with fresh eyes, but it is the first time either one of us have gone back to rewatch it, at least the first episode. So it's kind of interesting seeing that first episode, knowing what comes later and everything else, and you know, much like the pilot episode we're about to discuss, you know, I also like to think that you and I were kind of mismatched, but yet somehow perfectly combined partners who are also going to bounce back in time to take a look at, you know, the show. Because this debuted back, I think, in early 2014, which is actually a few months before we even started our Serious TV Drama Podcast. So it precedes us podcasting. So it's that long ago. God.
So I suppose, you know, Jana, you know, I've been thinking about you a lot today. I'm glad I got to hang out with you and Dave, you know, the one night. It was, you know, definitely a good time, and I was glad I was able to do that. It was really a good time. I've never gotten drunk that fast as I did off that damn margarita. I mean, it was just like zero to totally drunk in like 10 minutes. And then it was just, you know, sky's the limit. But they, even though I was just some weird internet stranger, they both, you know, rolled out the red carpet, and it was a very nice red carpet for me. I had a good old time. So, you know.
So instead of taking a full drink to get you drunk, it took only like half a drink this time or something?
Oh, not even half a drink. I mean, it was just, I don't know. But it didn't taste like alcohol. It just tasted like, this is some interesting, you know, yellow concoction, a margarita. I've heard a lot about these things. Yeah. I think I had a raspberry one or two, but I'd never had like a, whatever flavor yellow is. But it was just like, whew.
You should have known something was coming when they told you it was the Bill Cosby special. But anyway, but yeah, I mean, you suggested this to me earlier today, and normally when you come at me with a somewhat impulsive "let's record tonight" kind of thing, I tend to say no. But obviously, given the situation, and you know. John is both a friend of ours and, you know, one of our quote unquote loyal listeners as well. So if this in any way brings her just, you know, a few minutes of, I don't know if we'll bring happiness with our podcast, but at least enjoyment or something, you know, or satisfaction, since we're probably not going to be as mean as we might have expected to be about the episode.
Yeah, I'd say Jana and all of our, like, you know, five loyal listeners, they're kind of like the Alfred to our very well-acted young Bruce Wayne.
Right.
So we rely on them a lot.
And, you know, also, we're not, at least as far as I'm concerned, and I think it goes for both of us, we're not going to put on any pretense here, you know, as we chat about this, you know. So we may very well talk about how the beginning of certain plot threads that we see here will eventually be resolved or not. Or I don't have any intention or plans of making any swipes at the second season of True Detective, because, you know, other than the title, cops, I don't know, murders and a whole lot of testosterone, maybe, they don't really have much to do with one another. So hopefully the to the extent of how dim our view is of the second season really shouldn't have any bearing on how we look at the series pilot that came out a year and a half earlier.
Right, yeah, there's not much reason to talk about that, even though you do have to, since we do know somebody that for some reason thinks Colin Farrell's character in season two is awesome, you'll be able to shit on him for that in person next week, so I'll make sure to remind you to do that.
Oh,
actually,
yes.
We should both cut our facial hair, like have this shitty looking poop stash like he did in there.
Oh, yeah, one additional thing, in case anyone even cares out there. For the first time in roughly 4.5 years, Dan and I will be in the same place at the same time. Yes, I am making the trip to Raleigh to meet up with Dan and a ton of other folks who have been meeting in either April or May for the last several years. They're all fans and friends of the Jay and Jack podcast and so on and so forth, even though I think at this point the yearly event has kind of transcended the podcast. Now it's just become about friends, new and old, getting together once a year. So I'm finally taking the plunge, getting on a plane for the first time in 9 years, putting off the rent for a few more weeks so I could afford it, you know. But I figured I had to do it one of these days, so I'm finally
doing it. Yeah, you need a vacation. You'll have a good one.
Right, and now you can't lord it over me that I don't go, so there you go.
Oh, I was never lorded over.
No, not you. What? No. Ixnay.
I'm innocent.
All right. But we are here. We are here to talk about something else. And that something is the series pilot of True Detective. Funny, and since you just, I watched it a few hours ago, you just finished watching it like minutes ago. It's kind of funny watching it now, you know, after, well, first and foremost, still has one of the most visually and orally arresting opening credit sequences of any show, which is a thing with HBO shows, which I've said before. There's one thing HBO shows tend to do well. They do marvelous opening credit sequences.
Yeah.
But I was struck by watching the first few minutes here and remembering when I watched it for the first time, specifically a few minutes in, when we get to the discovery of that woman's naked corpse, when she's like bound to the tree wearing like the crown of leaves and the deer antlers. I remember thinking, oh boy, this is going right into total Hannibal territory. And since you and I were both big Hannibal fans, maybe we thought that was what was coming. But it certainly wasn't.
No.
Although I think at least they didn't start right off that way. They had already started bouncing back and forth between 1995 and 2012. So we already knew that we were in store for something that was a little bit different than what we had seen before.
Yes. Oh, speaking of Hannibal, and this is just something for you to think about between now and our Legion podcast, but I want you to, you know, give it some thought, but if you could have Brian Fuller and Noah Hawley work together on a project, what kind of and they can just do their thing, what kind of project would you like to see them do? If it's like, you know, making a Star Trek movie or doing a Western or whatever. So just, you know, give us some thought and then we can discuss it on the Noah Hawley specific Legion podcast in a couple days.
Okay, make sure to remind me. I will absolutely have an answer, and then we can talk about our respective ideas on that. Awesome. Because whatever they would do, especially those two together, you know, it would be wholly and entirely original and not formulaic. And beautifully segue back to this, I think what really separates this pilot from most any other TV series, which there's been so many about detectives pursuing, you know, some serial killer or another, is that it's anything but formulaic. It's not a procedural, other than perhaps the examination of how slow and even failing following actual procedures can lead to a murder mystery remaining, well, I shouldn't say it remained unsolved. They did quote unquote catch the killer, but since they caught the wrong guy, it means it was unsolved for 17 years. And what's really compelling, watching it again, even though I know where it's all going this time around, it's really fascinating watching how slowly but surely those two detectives that are interviewing both Rusty and Marty, or Cole and Hart, I never know, should I refer to them by their first names or last names, in 2012, how they're already seeding the idea that Cole could possibly be the murderer, or at least the current murderer, if nothing else.
Right. Yeah, I don't remember if I noticed it that quickly the first time around. I think it took me a few episodes to get that impression. But yeah, they're definitely, you know, jonesing towards that at this point.
Yeah, I think I was picking up on it more with when they were talking to Marty than to Rust. And it also made me think that was why they were more willing to accede to Rust's demands for, you know, to just smoke or to have beer and all those other things. But the one thing I was struck by more, and again, it's watching this pilot and then remembering what happens after it. Although that mystery element is there and obviously continues throughout the series, because they love dropping their little cryptic clues and arcane references that, you know, people are probably Googling the hell out of, you know, a few years ago, if I remember. Oh, the Yellow King, what's the Yellow King? And eventually it does lead to the killer. This show, when it comes right down to it, it's really more of like an existential examination of these two men. You know, detectives Cole and Hart. I think the real, or the true detective story here, or the real mystery, is more Rust Cole than any murder case. I think it's more about trying to find out about him and, you know, because what's fascinating is when you're seeing him in 2012 and you've already seen and you're given the chance for the contrast between the way he is in 1995, then the mystery is, well, how did he get to this place? Because he's quite different now. But then when you're watching him in 1995, you're wondering, well, how did he get to that place? And they do start to ease in a little bit of exposition where you, but a lot of it's always been shrouded in mystery. I think they make a reference or something to maybe Marty was trying to find out about him, look into his files or something when he first got him as a partner, and a lot of that information was, I think they said, was redacted. So at this point, they're kind of telling us, okay, stuff happened in Texas, and it was such that no one's even allowed to know, which isn't interesting, for like police files, but it makes you wonder. And I'll tell you right now, do I remember if we find out? I remember. It's been
Yeah,
it's been
I'm pretty
four.
sure we do, but I don't remember what it was.
I imagine we do. So I guess already I'm already citing, I will have limitations in remembering what happens after. So it's really more about, so thankfully we really are just talking about the pilot and these two characters.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I'll tell you one thing. I've been watching just a ton of old noirs lately, and I'm definitely noticing, I guess this season of this show, probably could be classified a neo noir or whatever, but I'm definitely noticing like that kind of story structure, showing in this itself.
Oh,
So
yes.
here, the with the flashback to the old case and that kind of stuff, it definitely feels like, in the vein of a lot of those movies I've been watching.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in a way, the story and really the Rust Cole character even more so, although I do want to give Hart his due and then some as we talk about this. I feel his character is kind of just a somewhat subversive and extreme twist on your TV or movie cliche character, the cynical, been through hell, self-abusing, somewhat misanthropic loner cop. It's funny because I was having the noir thought too. There's a phrase which escapes me at the moment because whenever something that's film noir but it's in a different setting, they always have to give it some other kind of label. So this taking place, in Louisiana, so it's got that kind of that southern rural feeling. There's a phrase for that combines with noir. Do I remember what it is? It's nothing as stupid as Southern fried noir or something. I don't remember what it was,
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, but I can't remember what they
but it's
call
got
it.
that, but it's definitely got that feeling to it. And it's funny because
Yeah.
when I think noir, although obviously there's been any number of noir things that deal specifically with, members of the police force, it's usually, private eyes, I think. And I couldn't help but think that on one hand, Cole's character might have made more sense as a private detective, but then on the other hand, it would be kind of difficult to imagine any clients hiring him because
Yeah.
they'd be sitting there, trying to hire him, like saying, trying to get him to like to follow their cheating spouse, and then he would sit back and say something like, we are things that labor under the illusion of having a self, and all that stuff. Everybody's nobody. It's like, pretty sure at that moment you'd be like, yeah, and you're looking on your phone Googling for another PI.
Yeah, I could, but I definitely could see Marty as like, kind of like, a more typical like, noir detective type. I mean, he just kind of has that like, rage filled bull in a china shop, character, kind of like maybe like Ralph Meeker, the way he plays his character in Kiss Me Deadly, just kind of like, seems like that. Just like there's always anger going on,
Oh
and
yeah, or even, although the character's name escapes me at the moment, like the Russell Crowe character in L.A. Confidential, who also had that bull in a china shop rage kind of thing that you always felt was somewhat suppressed with him. I mean, what's interesting about the Marty Hart character, and for me, that was the character I kind of, latched onto when I watched it the first time, and probably many other people did as well, because to some extent, he's kind of our stand-in. Just by the way he listens and is constantly exasperated by his partner's, rather esoteric musings. And just like what you're saying, he's kind of in the mold of your prototypical fictional detective. He's the mostly good man. He's probably a bent a rule or two. I mean, on one hand, you think, okay, he's a guy who loves his wife, but he cheats on her all the same. Which, of course, you could say that's the hallmark of pretty much every other leading married male character on any upper tier TV show for the last 20 years. I started thinking about that. Yeah. Wait, which, who does, you know, The Sopranos, Mad Men, The Shield, Rescue Me. I was like, maybe Walter White deserves more credit because he might be the only one I can think of who didn't.
I guess we're lucky that Carmen turned him down because, you know, he can be our one good guy, our one good husband.
Oh man. But more about the job, and Marty's really more about the job. He might have seen his share of bad shit, but not to the extent I think Cole has. So he never goes quite as far. I think up until the series starts, he's never gone quite as far as Cole. Like he certainly drinks, but he doesn't have the drinking issues that Cole does. You know, because Cole, as we learn in this episode, although Marty has yet to find out, he's trying to numb that ever-present pain of having lost his child. And I guess that's probably what really fuels, at least that's what I think, fuels Cole in his pursuit of any killer, especially if it's someone who's killed someone like, you know, a teenager, a girl, or something like that probably reminds him of his own daughter.
Right.
Whereas I think Hart's really doing it because that's the job. You know, that's his duty. That's his responsibility. It's the one duty or responsibility he can live up to since he's clearly not able to do it in terms of marital fidelity. And what's interesting is that he is about procedure, about, you know, he's, you know, follow the lead, follow the evidence, and so on. Whereas Rust is more focusing on the less tangible. I mean, I wouldn't call them brains and brawn because that really does Marty's character a disservice. I think it's more that I think Rust is more cerebral and maybe Marty's more pragmatic. So, and that's true. Yeah. And that's also their view of life. Of course, I don't know if there's very many people who have the kind of nihilistic view of life that Rust does. But I think that's what really drew people in to the series more so than anything else were these two characters and, you know, the always present conflict between them, whether they're on screen together or even if they're referring to each other in one another's absence or something. And I guess a lot of this series until it gets to the end is about, in a way, the rebuilding, I don't know if you even call it rebuilding a friendship or relationship, or actually building one, because even though they might have been together as partners, I think he makes the reference for 7 years, I don't really get the impression they ever were friends during those 7 years. At least that's not the way I took it.
Yeah, same here.
So, as I'm watching it, I remembered, before I even put it on, that one of my favorite things about the pilot were all the conversations that take place in the car. And once again, I love the car scenes. I think that's some of the best stuff in the episode by far. Did you still have the same kind of level of enjoyment watching those scenes as you recalled maybe a few years back?
Oh yeah, they were shot well, and then it just worked as a good setting. You know, I suppose, you know, where a show that takes place in the Deep South, they have time for these long car rides where a show in New York City, for example, they wouldn't necessarily have such a long, you know, transition time that's right. A different place. I mean, of course, it takes forever, I'm sure, to ride in the subway or a taxi or whatever, but it's not as easy to have an actual scene in such a setting.
Well, it's... And I actually remember to talk about this with my friend / producer if I ever need to defend something in a script or something. It occurs to me that one of the interesting tricks that a writer and also a director in conjunction with the writer will do is sometimes people worry about having a scene that's just people talking, and they feel there needs to be some sort of sense of progression, action, motion, whatever. If they're talking in a car, they're in motion. They're already, you know, the world is whipping by them.
Right.
Maybe something catches their eye outside the car. Like there's that moment when Rust sees that little girl on the side of the road which you figure is already kind of a red flag for reminding him about his own daughter, perhaps, or something. But I think the reason those scenes work so well is that they're giving us, I mean, yes, there is a certain level of exposition there, but I think it's so much more about character that it works really well. I mean, having Russ go on about his philosophies about life and, and putting aside whatever, however crazy or odd they may seem to some people or most people, but it's giving us a lot of insight into him. And especially if you're going to watch a series that's about detectives, I think it's really important to get an idea of how a character, that detective's mind works. So
Yeah.
that way you can see how they, how they figure things out, how they follow the clues, how they proceed about things. And what's nice, and especially on a series that wasn't a series that had the most levity, shall we say. Those little moments of Marty's reactions to him and wanting him to shut up are probably among the few laughs we get, in this series overall. So, and it's nice that they got someone like Woody Harrelson to do that, because Woody Harrelson, for my money, might be one of the most talented actors out there, because he's a guy who, he's semi-chameleon like.
Yeah, he can do everything.
Because,
I mean, he's extremely versatile.
I mean, he we know we all, everyone knows he ha, he has a, he already has a great comedy background, whether it be obviously Cheers, but also if Kingpin's one of my favorite comedies, and he's just unbelievably great in that. And but he can also play, and obviously he can also play drama, and he could be the guy you're rooting for and your hero, but he's played the bad guy a bunch of times too. So I love when an actor is able to kind of move from one type of role to the other, and they don't get pigeonholed. So it's
Right.
so and you, I think Woody Harrelson, you can't really pigeonhole him. I mean, that's what's great
Right.
about him. He's, I would even I'd give him enough credit to say, on the American side, he's kind of like our he's kind of become like our Gary Oldman to a certain extent, where,
Nice. Yeah. And yeah, he's definitely rock solid in this pilot. I mean, just nonstop. Every second you see him on screen, he's just all the way into that character and just the physicality behind it, and just yeah, the looks, the weird, the voice that he's using, southern thing with a dip in. I mean, it just doesn't stop.
And of course, I mean, most people do, and rightfully so, although I still contend him do, when McConaughey chose to do those Lincoln commercials like a year or two later, it kind of took away from True Detective, because, oh, so he's still doing the rambling, weird talking in a car thing? Well, anyway,
Yeah.
but back to this, even putting aside, whatever dialogue they speak, the sheer physicality of both performances really fits the character so well. I mean, like you used the phrase "bull in a china shop" kind of thing, and the whatever. I mean, Harrelson's definitely got that, and even he's always got like it always seems like there's something in his mouth. Like I don't know if he's I don't think he's I don't think he's chewing tobacco, but it always looks like he is, because he's got something in his mouth. But although I don't recall seeing him eating, or maybe he's chewing gum, I don't know. But he in the 1995 thing, he's a guy who's pretty much in shape, but he's kind of he's a burly guy, and obviously when you get to 2012, he's put on a little bit of weight, which I love that they did that. But I also love that. I mean, I know when they hired McConaughey for this, actually they didn't hire, he's a producer, so when he chose to take this role, he did this at shortly after he did the movie that he won the Oscar for, which was it Dallas Buyers Club? Was that the name of the movie? I think it was. Well, for those who remember that movie, he gets quite thin in that movie. He gets downright, downright emaciated in that movie. And although he's not emaciated here, he's still, if you hadn't seen Dallas Buyers Club, at all. And this was the first thing you would see in McConaughey in a few years. You would be stricken, or not stricken, but taken, I should say, with how thin he is, you know? And I think that really works for his character. You know, it's kind of like he's kind of become kind of a shell of a person, so to speak.
Right.
And so, and you know, he looks like a good wind could blow him away at certain points, even though, but there's something, but it's also kind of like a taut, like a wire as well. So it's like, you know, he could probably is like whip out, you know, like a snake or something. I don't know. But I really like that because it made me think that a lot more thought went into these two actors and these two roles and what they were going to do with them, more so than I can think of with most partner, you know, movies or TV shows. I mean, we've seen, you know, I've seen, and you've probably seen, but you know, tons of TV shows that are based
Right.
around, you know, two somewhat mismatched partners, you know, who have the, you know, their amount of, and some of them are excellent. I mean, I would never knock a show like Broadchurch, for example, which is a great show. Or and but now and now what but now watching this, I remember thinking, oh, this kind of makes me think of Broadchurch a little bit, except there's something just more powerful about this than they pull off for most of Broadchurch. Or what was that show on AMC that everybody watched initially and then we all got annoyed with? The Killing. And what, and again, it's one of those shows people told, you know, would tell you, hey, it got better, and then like, I don't care, whatever, I'll watch it, I'll never go back. But again, what I think made this show really stand out and this pilot stand out is the focus is really more about these two men, more so than the murder mystery. And which is just a bad way of me saying, I realized watching the pilot, holy crap, this is actually more about character than plot, which is unusual for something which you think is going to be, you know, detectives trying to hunt down a killer. And I think that might be what makes it stand out, you know, in addition to all the other things like the visuals and everything, which are, you could devote an entire podcast to just how great things look and how Louisiana becomes a character unto itself, you know, because of the way it, Cary Fukuyama, I hope I pronounce his name correctly, directs
It's Carrie Loudermilk, actually.
the
Yeah, but no, yeah. I mean, they put a lot of work into both these characters, and I definitely found it interesting this time around that I didn't really like either of the characters at all until close to the end of either episode. I'm biased, I suppose, but I didn't like Rust until he kind of just really got pissy when the Reverend showed up to the police headquarters. Because I don't know. I guess I'm. You know, I guess I'm probably prejudiced against those Southern super, like, you know, I'm the lamb of the Lord and screw all you and I'm still going to vote for Trump because I'm a hypocrite types.
Oh,
So
yeah, the evangelicals, yeah, right.
so when Rust got pissy with them, it's like, oh yeah, I like this guy. And then the same thing, just, you know, when Marty had his little moment where he was kind of nerding out about that former football player, even though the guy is just laying there, like, you know, not being able to, like, say anything, and he's just talking, you know, and Marty's just all like, yeah, you know, why she play, blah blah. And you know, I thought just it was just kind of like a nice touch where, like, you know, it was kind of just cool to see the character, like, you know, just not being kind of as much of a dick.
Right. I think for me, I think my feelings about the characters were probably somewhat similar to what I saw it the first time, although obviously I'm more informed about them because I got to see the following nine episodes or seven. I can't remember. Was this an eight episode series or a 10 episode? It was an eight episode series. Whatever, it doesn't
Yeah,
matter.
eight.
Yeah, it was an eight, right? That's right. I think my bias is whether he's a good guy or a bad guy, I'm always, I ref unless he's like playing the ultimate evil guy, I'm always reflexively gonna like Woody Harrelson because he's got that, like, there's a certain likability factor to him, you know. There are, so it's always interesting when he takes a role where it's almost like they're forcing you to not like him, you know. He's not likable in Natural Born Killers, you know, or something like that, or a few other things. But it, But it was more interesting for me was really watching Makani's performance more and having a better understanding of what he was doing. And again, it's all the a lot of their performances are all about all the little touches, whether it be just these little moments or scenes or just little mannerisms that they both adopt throughout the this episode specifically, and then later episodes. So, I mean, again, I don't believe that we're going to rewatch the entire series as a result of this, because I don't think either of us have the time, quite frankly.
Yeah.
But it almost makes me want to.
Right. Yeah, I had the same thought.
And I think one reason why was when we used to kind of we used to knock the first season a little bit.
Right.
I mean, when it first premiered, I was all about it. I was, because I had heard about it several months earlier, so I was all like, "Oh, look at me, pat myself on the back, because I told you all this was coming, and look what a big deal it is." No one, whatever.
Yeah.
But I never soured on the series. I certainly watched it all the way through, and I never went, "Oh, I don't like this anymore." It was one of those, when you start thinking about it, things start to bother me about the series.
Yeah, and I kind of like, when it comes to when people really, really overhype something and then just like jump on some bad wing and we're like, this is the coolest thing ever, and just can't acknowledge that like it just really isn't, even if it has some good stuff. Like Westworld, this is the first season on that, is a good example for me where, yeah, there's plenty of good stuff to like about it, but it's not the greatest thing ever, and it is far from flawless. So
I agree. That that that
yeah.
that that's something that's I think that's something that we the two of us tend to share.
Yeah.
That it's annoying when a series has its flaws, and sometimes many, and people become such ardent supporters of the show that they refuse to ever acknowledge or talk about that. I'm gonna compare them to Trump supporters. No, I'm just kidding. But
Yeah, but it was kind of annoying that like, everybody was all over True Detective, but like nobody cared about Fargo season one, and it was just, on about the same time, and of course it got the awards and stuff, and rightfully so, but the difference between the two shows is, Fargo will always hold up, and this pilot definitely holds up too, but I think Fargo will always hold up under more scrutiny.
And I think the reason for that is in that it's what if we had one major criticism of the entire season as a whole, is that while so much attention and care was given to the two lead characters, we felt they never really did much of anything with any of the other characters in the series, that they were just kind of just there as almost background actors. For the amazing job that McConaughey and Harrelson do, whereas
Right.
Fargo, again, perfect example. And I think we kept bringing that up that year because then they ended up in competition later on.
Right.
Fargo was about, oh, we're gonna really give you a vivid picture and for all of these characters. We're not just gonna, Fargo wasn't just about, the first season wasn't just about Martin Freeman and Billy Bob Thornton. And maybe what's her name? Molly, whatever. There's how what 7, 10, 12, whatever number of characters there were. I mean, there was tons of them, and they all stood out. You remembered who they were and why they were, and they had a reason for being there, and so on and so forth. Although now I can say I now know, and I will always try to remember this, that Marty's wife's name is Maggie, because that was my running
Yeah.
gag. Because whenever I would, you remember me doing this, when I'd get into a conversation, with someone who's a big True Detective fan, because they would rave on and on about it, and I would be pointing out that flaw, and they'd be like, "Oh no!" It's like, okay, the test would be, okay, we both know the two main characters are Rustin and Marty. Who's the third? Who would you say is the third biggest character? And they would say, "Oh, Marty's wife." It's like, okay, what's her name? No one ever remembered her name, and I said,
Yeah.
"See, that's a bad sign." And then I kept saying, "You might not have liked her, but you remember Betty Draper's name. You remember Skyler's name after the fir during the first season. why are we not remembering Maggie's name?
Right.
Now I know, but now that I know it's Maggie, I'll look more. Maggie and Marty.
Yeah, it's kind of regrettable, you know, and I get the impression from watching this. I mean, just like it seems like it'd be nice if they gave Michelle Monaghan more to do. I've heard she's good on that show that with like Aaron Paul, and I think Nancy's on that. I think, but I haven't watched
the
Path. It.
So I haven't seen it either.
The Hulu thing. So I would, you know, this is something to consider to watch at some point too, because I would get the feeling that, you know, we probably would like that if it's good. But yeah, it's just, you know, it's kind of, it's frustrating to see people that, you know, that you assume probably can act well, just not, you know, not giving the meat, you know, it's just like watching like somebody like, you know, doesn't have, like they're starving or something. It's right. Kind of sad.
Well, again, I think while I wouldn't dismiss that as a flaw, because it is, the only way I feel one can minimize it is just to come back to the fact that this is about these two men. And
right.
That's really what it's about, and so as a result, your other characters are going to be there really more to prop up these two performances more often than not. They'll have their moments; they have a few. I know there's a really good moment coming in probably the next episode with the girl that Marty's cheating with. That might be my other favorite moment on the series. I'm sorry, they were perfect. Anyway, but and it was funny. You know, I'm going to break the rule that I said in the beginning of the podcast. It was funny how it seemed like they tried to acknowledge that mistake in season two, and yet they got it wrong. Anyway, they just gave us a whole bunch of characters we just didn't care about. Like, I just don't care about them. Back to the pilot, just for a few moments. I think my favorite scene in the entire episode is probably the entire scene or sequence, however you want to phrase it, that happens at Marty's house. When Russ comes over for dinner. I really, watching it again, I was like, there's so many things I like about this scene. And the way it kind of veers from being, you know, off-putting to tragic to comical, you know, it's all, and they pack it all. And I forgot how amazing those two little girls are. Them whispering during the meal. that to me, I think that was what really hooked me more than anything. It's like, oh, I really like this scene a lot.
Yeah, it was great. There was, you know, just lots going on in that scene too, on all different levels. I mean, just seeing, I mean, like Marty's insecurity as he didn't, you know, come out and make a complete fool of himself, but you could tell that he really wasn't happy that his wife and his partner were talking when he wasn't in the room. You know,
right.
He just wanted to, that kind of thing. Just seeing that kind of, instant, insecure, you know, weak male crap come out. I mean, just so much different stuff happening.
And the way he just goes into that glare when Russ doesn't go along with the plan to leave. It's like, no, I'm just gonna... And I love that they played... Now, a lesser show might have played that more comically. Because that felt like that was like a pure comical moment. But McConaughey plays it very straight, and so does Harrelson. And as a result, I think I liked it even more as a result, if you know what I mean.
Right.
It's funny how on so many television series, and really the higher quality ones, and I would still say the first season of True Detective falls into that category. Some of the best scenes tend to be dinner scenes. Scenes around a table, Breaking Bad. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
These are really good green beans, you know. Yeah. You know, that's great. But that's great. But also, I mean, there's other shows. I mean, whether it be Mad Men had scenes like that. The Sopranos, oh my God, had great scenes that, you know, took place around the table so many times. So it's really kind of a nice little moment in buried in the middle of this episode with everything else going around it. The other thing I really enjoyed tremendously, more than I remembered from the first time, I love the 2012 stuff. Both of them. But everyone goes on and on about Makani's performance, and we know in a future episode we're going to get the time is a flat circle bit with him there, or whatever. But oh my God, Harrelson's great in What's his line that kind of comes out of nowhere when he talks about all the different types of cops, and whether they go to jail? You got the surrogate dad, you got the bully, all the other things he says. They're like, which kind of cop are you? Like, I'm just a regular dude with a big ass dick. And I was like, I love that. Like, the fact that he says that to two men who are of color make it even more interesting to me, I thought. Yeah, I went there. So, in a weird way, I kind of found the 2012 versions of them a little bit more interesting than the 1995 versions, and I don't know if that makes any sense,
No,
but
I see what.
I mean, maybe it's because I was just maybe it's because we see them in 1995 and we're establishing them that way. And obviously, I already said there's all this mystery about Rust, but we're already finding out stuff about about his daughter being dead and blah 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 blah. So they already created a new mystery, like how did these guys get to where they are in 2012? Like apparently Marty's not on the police force anymore. He's working. It's like, well, what led him to do that? Why did he leave the force? What would have caused that? Is he still with, is he still with his wife or not? Probably not. I don't know if I don't think it's actually said in the episode, but I don't even. That's another thing I don't actually remember. There's no way they could still be together. So apologies if everyone knows that. No, of course she's still with him. I don't know, but I'm just assuming they're not. But I really was enjoying those scenes. And also, it's interesting the way they're even shot differently. I mean, they're even sitting in different parts of the same room. Are those two different rooms? No, it's the same room, right?
I think it's two different rooms. Yeah, I
Huh.
think it's beautiful with them just shooting at a weird angle, but I could be wrong.
Well, I thought they were, because it's this, I thought, well, I was hard to imagine that these two detectives would use two different rooms for them. I thought that Rust is sitting at the other end of the table from where they are. But when Marty sits down, he sits in front of the blinds. So you know what I mean? So as opposed to sitting at the head of the table, so to speak, where Rust is, he's sitting on alongside the longer side of the table, the heart. If that makes any sense. So
Right,
I
yeah.
so I because that's why because that's why it's lit differently because he's got the you see the office behind him and through the blinds, whereas Russ is it's shot it's slightly darker because he doesn't have the light source behind him. I'm sure that was a cinematographer's choice to do that, whatever.
Yeah.
So I was really by the time I was done with it, I was like, you know what? I'm kind of pleased to watch that again. It was better than I thought it was. But then again, I remember liking the pilot. Go on.
Oh yeah, I definitely think it's holding up better than I thought it would.
Of course, the only problem is then again, gonna break that rule again. It does make me that much more annoyed with season two.
Yeah, but we can just pretend. We can just end season two to Italy with Hannibal and just kind of leave it there.
Yeah, I know. But at least
Yeah.
at least they course corrected, man. Once they got
Right.
to Red
Oh yeah.
Dragon, I was all about it again.
I know, and when they get to season four, then it'll definitely be good then too.
Are you talking about Hannibal now? You're gonna
Oh
kill
yeah.
me.
Someday.
I've heard another. I thought I heard a rumor again, like a couple weeks ago, but I don't know what that
Yeah.
was about.
I think he's bouncing back, but yeah, there's lots of good stuff to like in this episode. I mean, I'd forgot that Clark Peters had a role in it, which of course we know from Lester on The Wire and like
Oh yeah.
every other show ever. So it was nice to see him have a role. And did you notice the actor from Rectify this time around?
The actor from Rectify. Okay.
Yeah, one of the the dude that plays Carl Daggett, law enforcement officer in Rectify. He's one of the detectives working in the working with Marty and Rust.
Right, he's got
his hair is slicked back. He's got a horrible mustache and just a really bad haircut. But he's definitely in there. So yeah, J.D. Evermore. So I remember we definitely liked him a lot, especially towards the last couple of seasons. So it's cool to see him here. We know this character will never get developed, but it's still nice to see him.
Right. And also with Clark Peters, we've got at least two people from The Wire on this, because one of the two detectives in the 2012 interviews. Is the actor who played Brother Mazzone from The Wire. So that's kind of cool to see. And then another, like, oh, there's that guy from Orange is the New Black. And there's it. Anyway. It's funny. It's kind of funny you should mention Rectify, because I was thinking about Rectify a little bit when I was watching this for some reason. I mean, there's some sort of odd similarity or parallel I felt happening while I was watching it. I mean, take out the horrific, murder thing, even though obviously there is a murder at the heart of Rectify as well. But something about the pacing and the contemplativeness, whatever. I don't know how to phrase it. Maybe some of Rust's quieter moments when he's not talking. Just reminded me a little bit of that. I mean,
right.
Obviously, they're very different shows in a lot of other ways, but I feel they share some DNA, I think.
Yeah, the way that Rust takes the world in is, I mean, it's not exactly similar. It's similar to the way that, Daniel sees things, I suppose. I mean, not on the exact same level, but you definitely can see similarities between the two.
Right.
The way they just drink in things or just look at the light or whatever and just kind of consider it.
I think the difference is, and if I'm recalling how the series ends, I think where Rust eventually gets to by the end of the series, which I think some people had questioned, is where Daniel kind of is in a lot of ways already in Rectify. What makes Daniel's character very interesting in Rectify, there's a lot of things that make him interesting. It's not just one thing. But he's a character who's gone through hell. And he's suppressed so much about what he's suffered through and what he's gone through for so many years. And yet, there's still something at the core of his being that has a certain amount of hope for humanity. And that's something, at least when you watch this pilot, Rust doesn't have. Rust doesn't have much hope for humanity. So it's a very interesting, that would be one thing that they're kind of almost opposites in that sense. But I think Rust eventually does get to that place by the end of the series. Again, if I'm remembering correctly, I'm the guy who can't remember if Marty's still with his wife or not. So obviously I don't remember enough about the series to talk about the later episodes. Oh, good. Oh, I just realized Jonna likes Rectify too, so it's a bonus for Jonna.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then I guess before we wrap it up, I do have a theory as to who the killer is. And one thing I didn't notice the first time we watched this is that the location that they find Dora Lang's body is near the town of Erath. And I did a little looking, and that's actually 20-25 miles from where Cade lives, one of the podcasters that we do joins us on our Flash podcast. And I'm sure you've noticed there's been a fair amount of times where he's missed recordings, he's been late, he says he's out of town doing stuff. Is he out of town killing people? I don't know, but I'd just like to put that out there. I mean, there's still 7 episodes left. It could go either way, but it's pretty close to Lafayette, so I think it's at least a person of interest, I'd say.
That might be one of your more plausible theories I've heard on one of our podcasts. Okay, because he's got that, but he can be charming, as a killer should be. And that whole business about losing electricity all the time. Come on, it's because he's using the generator for the bodies and stuff. Anyway, All right. Okay. Yeah, it was kind of fun talking about that. I hope the folks who listen to this podcast got a kick out of remembering True Detective. Unfortunately, we couldn't alert any of you guys out there that we were going to do this, so you couldn't like watch it a week ahead of time and then, you know, listen to us talk about it. But, you know, which is one of the things we probably kind of did. I can't speak. I didn't bother with the whole recap-ity kind of a thing, so I thought it was kind of needless in this case. So, anyway. Okay, if you enjoy this podcast, you would enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast page. You can find that page on Facebook, like the page, and join the conversation about shows old, like True Detective, and new, like Legion, and so many others. You can also find us on the iTunes the very same way. Type in the Serious TV Drama Podcast, subscribe to the feed, and you can rate and review us there. You can also find us on Google, probably 8 million other ways. If you just type Serious TV Drama Podcast, you can find us that way, I think. God knows. And finally, you can also follow us on Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. Like I said, we will be recording again later this week, at least once, possibly twice, depending if we all get our act together. I keep choosing to go out drinking instead of watching Legion on Tuesday night, so it's kind of I'm gonna share some of the blame on our delaying that by a day or two every week.
Well, to be fair, I'm not drinking and I just fall asleep at like 9:30 watching Legion because I'm worn down and it just happens. But it's not just you, because I think you've wanted to do it earlier than me the last couple weeks, and I just keep falling asleep. Of course, I guess I had a car accident too, so I mean, anyway.
And then you just end up falling asleep during the podcast anyway. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Well, that could also be my fault too. So I shouldn't actually say that. Like, oh, Scott, you're so interesting.
Yeah, I think last week I had more to say about a variety of other movies. Yeah, I think I said more about Stalag 17 than I did about
So we're planning a special Billy Wilder podcast next month. Anyway, wow, that would be a great podcast.
Oh yeah, I did get one of our listeners got to watch Sunset Boulevard on Netflix last month.
Oh, excellent! Yeah. I would say if you're gonna watch Sunset Boulevard by Billy Wilder. Oh my God, followed up a Double Indemnity. Come on. Anyway, also Billy Wilder. Has a finger on the throne for possibly best film noir, although there are several others in contention. That tends to be kind of an obvious choice. That's why probably people don't want to pick it anymore.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. It was between that and Touch of Evil last month, and I bought Touch of Evil and watched that. But Double Indemnity, did I say that right? It's next.
Yeah, and those two go together so beautifully. You know, I would just if I were you, I would just bought them both.
Yeah.
Oh, but Double Indemnity, it's like whip cracking dialogue. It's just so so good. Mm-hmm. So
awesome.
It's really
Yeah, and on the Legion podcast I'll talk to you about the most recent noir that I watched, but yeah, we'll save that for Thursday night. Yeah, of course.
Whatever all right.
It takes to wake my ass up.
Okay. All right. With all that, hope you all enjoyed our special little podcast. I especially hope Jana. Is it Jana? How do you pronounce her name?
Jana.
See, I can't even pronounce our listeners' name. No wonder we don't have any listeners. Hope she got a kick out of this, as well as our other listeners. And you'll be hearing from us soon. And so, good night, Dan, and good night, everybody else.
Cade, please don't kill us for this. Good night.
Or maybe I hear the music all of it.
detectives. When they shoot, 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 they beat him up until the teardrops start. But he can't be wounded cause he's got no heart. A long shot, a dead jumping sign. Visible shivers running down my spine. Her clothes, close up of the sign that says we never close. You snatch a chew and you match a cigarette. She pulls the eyes out with a face like a magnet. I don't know how much more of this I can take. She's filing her nails while they're dragging the lake. She's watching the detectives.
Watching the detectives. Watching the detectives.